Good afternoon, Chair Swinford and members of the committee. My name is Michael Delaney. I'm the Attorney General of the State of New Hampshire. I, too, have visited this committee on many occasions and am pleased to be back and worked very closely with this committee on the Justice Reinvestment Initiative last year. The carpet is the same as the last time I was here, although you do tend to move the tables around in different directions quite often. And I do have some prepared marks that I'm going to be working off of. As Attorney General, I am a firm believer in law and order. But there are two equally important aspects of public safety. The first is getting the right people off the streets and behind bars. The second is correcting the behavior of those that we send to prison so that when they return home, they will be rehabilitated and they will not present an ongoing threat to public safety. In New Hampshire, I think it's fair to say that we have done a very good job on the first aspect of public safety that I just described. But we have a relatively poor track record on the second, and we need to succeed on both frontiers to effectively advance public safety. And we've charted a course to do this through justice reinvestment. Last year, I really had the privilege to chair the Justice Reinvestment Leadership Group, and we identified evidence-based strategies to reduce recidivism and promote more cost-effective correctional practices in the state. Our goals were primarily to advance public safety first, and while doing so, put a dent in the unsustainable cost increases in our correctional system, to correct some inefficiencies in our existing parole system, and to reinvest cost savings we could achieve in community-based treatment and sanction programs, programs that have been proven to work better than what we're doing right now in New Hampshire. Senate Bill 500 last year was the framework we recommended to achieve those goals, and our recommendations received widespread support in the general court, in the judiciary, in the executive branch, and as former Speaker Sitek mentioned, we worked with hundreds of stakeholders across the state. The improvements that we achieved together are meaningful ones, and they represent well-needed systemic changes to our existing system. We are the safest state in the nation, yet our prison population increased by 31% between 1999 and 2009. That's an astounding figure. State spending on corrections nearly doubled in the past decade. But we are not fueling a system that can be justified as providing our citizens with a meaningful return on this dramatically increased public investment. More than 50% of prison admissions in 2009 were people's whose probation or parole had been revoked. Failure at these rates is undermining public safety. It's eating up more taxpayer dollars, and it's quite simply adding fuel to bigger government. It is simply unsustainable, and we should not reverse direction on our efforts to fix the growing problem. This troubling trend that we're fighting in New Hampshire is prevalent across the nation. With 5% of the world's population, our nation now houses 25% of the world's reported prisoners. Today, a staggering 1 out of every 100 adults in our nation is behind bars. And even more troubling, 1 out of 31 adults is either behind bars or on probation or parole. The rate of mentally ill people in prisons rather than in mental hospitals has quadrupled over the years. I am too pleased that House Bill 524 keeps us on course to implement many of the core recommendations passed last year in Senate Bill 500. These changes do have us headed in the right direction. And I recognize that it is not unusual or surprising for the general court to be back in the next legislative session seeking modifications to major legislative changes. I support some adjustments to the new laws that were passed, particularly with respect to the standardized 90-day setback provision for parole violations as it applies to serious violent offenders or sex offenders. But I am concerned about two of the changes proposed in House Bill 524, and they're both of the changes that former Speaker Sitek also spoke to you about. The first change would eliminate the 9-month mandatory supervision provision for all offenders who have served their maximum sentence. In 2009, almost 1 in 5 offenders in New Hampshire prison served their maximum sentence and were released to the community without anyone supervising them. Now, these are the people that go through the minimum on truth in sentencing, go all the way to their maximum, and still have not achieved parole throughout their entire sentence. And at that point, they have to be released back to the community, whether we want to release them or not. The result under the prior law, before we changed this, was that the individuals that the parole board were most worried about, like the sex offenders and the violent criminals who could not achieve parole, they received the least amount of monitoring when released from prison because they had been required to serve their full sentences. And after release, there is simply no legal authority to mandate treatment or to closely monitor offenders. Most states protect public safety by requiring all offenders to be supervised after release from prison. And New Hampshire needs to continue to do the same thing that we implemented in Senate Bill 500. Last year, 225 offenders left prison with nobody watching them. No monitoring, no mandated treatment, and little protection for victims. Under our new law, every offender is required to be supervised for at least 9 months after release, which is the period when half of all recidivism occurs. That's the period when it's most likely that more trouble is going to occur. This provision was endorsed by the victims' rights community and law enforcement because mandatory supervision provides victims with more information, more control, and more security. I urge you to retain this provision of the law, and I support improving this law by clearly establishing in the law that all sex offenders and offenders against children will receive intensive supervision by the Department of Corrections. You're going to hear that that's occurring now, but we could write that right into the law, that intensive supervision will occur while they're under the 9-month mandatory supervision provision. Second, you will be hearing from the Department of Corrections, who will be offering some suggestions on how to change the 90-day setback period for parole offenders. And I support the changes that they are going to outline. We do need to provide the parole board with more flexibility to establish longer setback periods in serious cases, for sexual offenders, and for those who refuse to participate in programming. And I agree that in some cases, the 90-day setback period is either inappropriate or it may provide a disincentive for meaningful participation in treatment and counseling. It's a weakness in the new law that we can tighten up, but I am concerned that House Bill 524 goes too far by eliminating the standardized 90-day setback period altogether. That 90-day setback period should be a required default rule, and exceptions from it should be well thought out and limited. And if we reject this provision in its entirety, we run the risk of significantly undermining an important component of the framework that we've established to rein in out-of-control cost increases in our parole system. And we very well may just be returning to the inefficiencies of the prior system that we went through so much effort to try to update and improve. There is a way to modify the standardized 90-day setback provision while retaining its essential elements. And I urge you to consider the alternative language that will be proposed by the Department of Corrections. I thank you very much for the opportunity to appear before you today, and I very much look forward to working with this committee on this bill and on other criminal justice initiatives throughout the session. Thank you very much.
Yes, General. In Stratford County, our prison population has gone down, not up. Why is it that our population is going down, putting them back in the society and rehabilitation, is rehabilitated within the community?
And thank you for the question, and I certainly do acknowledge that Stafford County has some wonderful community-based treatment programs that are very, very consistent reentry programs with what we're trying to accomplish through justice reinvestment. The reason, and that's essentially representative of what we tried to figure out when we started this process. How can we be the safest state in the nation and have our prison population increasing by that much? And we looked at every potential cause one by one. We started at the very beginning. Is our crime rate going up? And we learned it's not the crime rate. Our crime rate has been very stable over the years, and that's a credit to all of the fine work that this committee has done. Are our police officers arresting more people? We looked at the arrest rates. That wasn't causing the problem. Maybe it was the courts. Maybe we were just sentencing people longer than we used to sentence them. And when we looked at our sentencing structure, it was quite impressive. We really learned that we have very consistent sentencing in our superior court system. The key factor that was driving the increases in the prison population, the key factor was the rate of recidivism. It was so high. Certain years it was 45%. Other years in the mid-2000s it was over 50%. One in two coming out through the Department of Corrections to be rehabilitated were failing and heading back in. And that was driving all the costs. And as the Department of Corrections spent more money on the prisons as opposed to programs, the programs weren't there. The people were coming out. They were failing again. We were sending them back in. That's the cycle that we're trying to break. But in order to do it, we need to really meaningfully fix our parole system. And what the evidence shows us is that if we provide more investments in community-based treatment and sanction programs, and if we reform how we're doing our parole right now, we can make a significant dent in that. We're talking about potentially reducing these recidivism rates by upwards of 40% with the parole changes. That's an aggressive thing that we've taken on that we can accomplish as long as we stay on track.
The follow-up, would you believe in an economy, what we have done is invested money in certain areas, the way our revenues have really increased on one side because we were willing to invest in drug court. I believe we have Memphis court now. We have so many different programs that are available to our citizens within Stratford County, and it's working. But we invested up front to achieve that. It is working, of course. I understand when we go to the state, would you believe that sometimes, you know, these prisoners are much more active, more dangerous than they would be at the county. But again, it's working at the in our area. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
Any other questions? Mr. Representative Piazza.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Attorney General Blaine, what are the top three crimes that are most commonly prosecuted in the state of New Hampshire?
Oh, I guess I wouldn't want to start to characterize them. Let me answer that generally by saying we've got a very, very stable crime rate. We've got a very low violent crime rate. So you're really going to find that it's the nonviolent offenses that I think are going to have the highest volume. Representative, I'd be glad to get you those breakdowns to the extent I can and provide them to the full committee. But I think you are going to find that it is not the violent crimes that are driving the numbers.
I'd be interested to see that report.
I'd be glad to get that to you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. As a follow-up to this last question, you mentioned that the parole violations were the main reason for recidivism and for people going back within a short period of time after being released. So would you support revising some of the violations in parole violations, such as alcohol abuse or marijuana use, to if we repeal those, that it won't then be a violation?
I would not support repealing violations for alcohol and drug use. I mean, so many of our people coming out on parole really need to get that treatment because they have either an abusive condition or an addictive condition. And I think all of the data we've gotten from the experts in the area do tell us that the violation itself is a significant component of changing behavior that we need to have in our pocket. And it's important that we have that in our pocket. The question is, how do we best use those violations to change behavior? Because after all, it is a Department of Corrections. And what we found is that if there are certain techniques that we can apply with parole violations that is most likely to get us the bang for our buck in terms of changing behavior. Part of that has to do with using short and swift sanctions. And in many instances, as we're seeing across the nation, a shorter parole violation sanction can get you as much behavior modification change as other areas. In addition, we need to have the right programming. We need to send parole violators to the right place and provide them with the right kind of treatment. I expect that the Department of Corrections that will be testifying will be able to talk to you very more specifically about the types of changes that we're making in the parole system to make those violations work more effective for our citizens, and ultimately to increase public safety by reducing the rate of failure and recidivism.
Along those lines, to increase public safety, do you feel that somebody who's just a simple user of alcohol or marijuana, even if it is in violation of parole, is better off in jail or prison than out working with his family, even if there's no victim?
Not necessarily. And a lot of it has less specifically to do with the crime they've been charged with and what their risk is, what their risk assessment is. And that's the trend that we're moving towards. Certainly, we need to make sure that we're providing them with the right treatment, whether that is within the system or in the community. And what we've found primarily is right now we do not have the proper amount of community-based programs to offer these offenders. And that's part of what we're trying to accomplish through justice reinvestment.
Thank you.
You're welcome.